4CIB now presents The Law and You, proudly brought to you by Bell Legal Group. With a large team of highly experienced professionals, you can feel safe knowing that Bell Legal can help you with your legal needs.
And a very good morning to you. Once again, it's The Law and You here on 4CRB. It's your opportunity to get free legal advice. That's right, free legal advice between now and 9:30. All we'd like you to do is give us a call. And our number, as always, 5520888. That's 5520888. South the Tweed River, of course, you need 07 in front of that number. And you can always use our email address if you're not in a position to get to the phone. And we'll be able to answer those questions next week. The email address, of course, is talkback, that's one word, all in lowercase, at crb.com. That's talkback at crb.com. Thank you to all the people who called in last week. Certainly an interesting program, and we had a number of calls, which is what we always want, to make the program more interesting for those of you who are listening. And you may recall at the start of the program, I made some mention of World Elder Abuse Awareness Day, which was going to be the following day. That was on the 15th of June. So that's a week ago tomorrow. And raising the awareness of elder abuse in our community. Now, one of the interesting things about this, and it's a shocking statistic, is that one in six Queensland seniors experience elder abuse of some kind, and sadly, it's usually at the hands of a family member or a trusted loved one. So that is obviously quite a concern within our community. And the likelihood is that those figures are not going to get any better unless we are prepared to do something about it. One of the reasons for that is because of the ageing of our population. In 2017, 15% of Australians were aged 65 or over, and they're estimating that by 2056, that will have jumped to 22% of Australians who will be over 65. So that certainly does mean that the possibility of these things occurring is going to be with us for the foreseeable future, and hence the reason why we need to be ever aware. But enough of that. We have our first caller online, as we say, a very good morning to Denise. G'day, Denise. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. Oh, just let the water out, sorry.
How can we help you today? Gone? It is indeed. How can I help you?
I have a question about a will.
Sure.
A friend of mine asked me this. She's not married. She was in a long-term relationship which has broken up.
Yep.
She is leaving a quarter of her will to her executor.
Right.
Now, she wants to know, is it wise to have an executor as a beneficiary as well?
Well, you certainly need to have an executor under a will, because that's the person who's basically responsible for administering the terms of the will. So every will mm-hmm. that's made needs to have an executor. If for some reason a person does a handwritten will and they omit to insert the person who's named as executor, then it requires an application to the court for the appointment of an administrator with the will annexed. So it's far simpler if you name the executor in the will. There is also certainly no problem whatsoever in providing a benefit to the executor under the will. So, I mean, it's a very common thing, for example, in a will for a mum and dad who've got children. The will say in probably nine cases out of ten, it'll say, I leave the whole of my estate to my spouse and I appoint them as executor of my will. But if they fail to survive me, then I appoint Joe Bloggs as executor and I leave all of my estate equally to my children. So that's a very simplistic précis of how it would go. So certainly no problem whatsoever with the executor being a beneficiary under the will.
Wonderful. That answers her question, and I'll let her know. Thank you very much indeed.
Okay, Denise, all the very best. And the time on 4CRB has just passed 10 minutes past 9. We presently have no callers online at all, so if you have a question or a query, you'll be able to get straight through on 5520888. Now, I was talking earlier, of course, about elder abuse and reminding you that it was World Elder Abuse Awareness Day last Wednesday. One of the things that is of concern here is that as the Australian population continues to grow, the average life expectancy is going to increase. And so we're going to have a higher proportion of people who are likely to develop diminished decision-making capacity. And that's, of course, going to make them more susceptible to violence, abuse or neglect. After this problem became widely identified, the other issue that the community became aware of is that there remains a large proportion of elder abuse in all its forms that is not reported, and so that is equally a concern. Now, there have been responses in relation to elder abuse at various levels, and the most obvious one is the state level, it responds through governmental and non-governmental organisations, and there's been certainly a significant amount of development in this area in terms of the protection of the elderly in Queensland as a result of the enactment of the Human Rights Act 2019. It provides that conduct constituting elder abuse, which can include physical violence, neglect, emotional or psychological abuse, and indeed social abuse and sexual abuse, and the obvious one, of course, financial abuse, can breach in one or more ways the rights of these elderly residents. And so if you become aware of anyone who you believe might be being subjected to elder abuse, the first thing to do, I think, is to probably get onto the elder abuse hotline, which is a Queensland service. I can give you the telephone number for that, and their number is 1300 651 191. So 1300 651 191. Now, one of the other things too that has come in through this legislation, which should be a comfort to many of us who suspect that we are seeing elder abuse in the community, is that there have been reforms made by the government in November 2020, which have broadened the protection for effectively for whistleblowers who disclose confidential information about an adult with impaired capacity to ensure that person is protected. And I've seen instances of this quite recently in a couple of QCAT matters that I've been involved with, where people who might be in a position of employment and are seeing elder abuse being inflicted onto someone they're caring for by another person, are able to report that elder abuse anonymously, so that they can maintain, hopefully, the integrity of their employment. So, as I say, it certainly is a big issue. And the other thing too, of course, is that these investigations can continue to take place, and the public guardian can investigate a complaint that an adult was subjected to even after the death of the adult. So that's a significant improvement in that area. So, as I say, if you do witness violence, or you're worried that an older person is at immediate risk, in extreme cases you can call the police on 000, but if it's not quite that serious, and obviously we need to be very aware of the burden that is placed upon the 000 service that's been subject to quite a lot of publicity in recent times, you can call the Elder Abuse Hot Helpline that I made reference to earlier, and that number is 1300 651 192. But the program's about your calls, and our telephone number is 5520 8888. That's 5520 8888. We'll be back after this word from our sponsor.
Bell Legal Group is the Gold Coast's longest established law firm. Their highly experienced team of professionals can provide assistance in wills and estate planning, property law and conveyancing, family law, business and commercial law, and much, much more. Contact our sponsor, Bell Legal Group, on 5597 3366. That number again, 055 97 33 66, or learn more about what they can offer at belllegal.com.au.
And this is The Law on You on 4CRB. Our telephone number, 55208888. That's 55208888. Very quiet morning this morning. Presently, no callers online. Please don't leave it to the last 5 minutes of the program when we often do get a bank up of calls, which result in us having to take calls offline. So if you've got a question or a query, you can call and get straight through right now. That's 55208888. And someone who's taken that advice, Debbie. Good morning, Debbie. Debbie, how are you today?
Hi, good. Just a question for John.
Sure.
How many times... Now, my daughter's been in a DVO situation.
Mm-hmm.
The guy's been given a 5-year DVO order. Reckons mm-hmm. cops are liars and everything else. But anyway, that's standard for a narcissistic male. But every so often, he just decides he's going to try and take my daughter for a DVO. And first time he did it, they live at Beenleigh Way. First time he did it, he went up to Pine Rivers Court. It got kicked out and sent back to Beenleigh. Then he started again with the next one. And she gets these. The police don't even serve them on her because they're that much of a joke. But the thing is, if they went back to court the other day, she got more information to prove all his lies, and he didn't bother turning up. Now, how many times can this happen before they suddenly say to him, enough is enough?
Well, I can't answer that question, Debbie, but I know for a fact that the magistrates will certainly get very sick of these matters. So correct me if I'm wrong, but I understand your daughter has got a DVO out against her former partner, or is it the partner who's got
That's correct.
All right,
no,
so let's
he
see
keeps
them
trying
do.
To take ones.
And he keeps trying he, to take DVOs out against
yeah.
her. Okay.
Yeah, trying to control her.
So, look, I think it'll ultimately get to the point where the police will regard it as an abusive process, and the and the magistrate very well. I'm not 100% sure of what powers the magistrates have in these situations, but the magistrate may have power to say that these actions amount to an abuse of the court process, and there may be some penalties that are available to the court to impose upon him for doing this. I think the difficulty is that the court will be reluctant to say that he can't continue to bring the applications, because what happens if on one absolutely rare occasion there is actually some basis to it, and so the court would be pilloried if they turned around and said, no, we're not going to allow you to file the application. But I think if the court finds that the application is vexatious...
It's always the same stuff.
Yeah, yeah. Vexatious.
And
there,
it's not
there must,
even... Not
there must
even,
come
you know,
a point where the court
stuff.
Will say enough is enough and impose a penalty on him for doing it. And it's only when people have those penalties imposed on them that all of a sudden it's hurting them in the hip pocket and they say, hey, enough of this. I need this money to put on the bar at the local pub. All right, then.
We're just sick and tired of it because it's stressing her out so
much.
I
can imagine.
As soon as everything calms down, it all starts again.
Yes.
And he blames her for not seeing his daughter, and yet any time that, even with mediation, anything, he says yes and then just doesn't do it and doesn't turn up and then blames her again.
Yep. No, well, sadly...
I'm getting sick of it.
Yes. Well, look, the only thing I could suggest... Where does your daughter live, did you say, around Beenleigh?
Yeah, she lives up past
Beenleigh. So just check whether there is a community legal service there that provide free legal advice to residents. Mm-hmm. She could possibly, if she can find one, there certainly are a couple on the Gold Coast, but if she could find one, I'm sure there'd be one in the Beenleigh area where she can go along and get free legal advice, and someone might be able to look into the circumstances of what's going on and just advise her more than I'm able to, because obviously the scope of this program doesn't permit me to have textbooks and everything online to look at it. But she could perhaps get some further advice. She might go in for an initial interview and someone would be able to look into it and then give her further advice on at a further interview.
Yep.
All right, then?
Okay, yep.
Debbie,
okay.
Thanks very
Thank
much
very
for your
much.
Call. And the time on 4CRB has just passed 21 minutes past 9. The Law on You is the program, 55208888, that number, and we say good morning to Jane. G'day, Jane. How are you?
Good morning, John. My name's Jane. How are you this morning?
Yeah, I'm very well. And you?
I'm good, thank you.
Good on
beautiful
you.
Day.
It is a magnificent day. And how can I help you today?
Mine's a will question. It's a strange one. I'm concerned about our wills that we've left to my daughter, son, son-in-law, daughter-in-law, etc. I'm just concerned about one of my family is going to contest the other. So I've tried to leave everything as fair as possible mm-hmm. because I am estranged from my daughter. But
right.
I know there's lots of issues that can happen after will, and there's no mm-hmm. such thing as an airtight will.
No.
Now, in Victoria, because we moved up from Victoria, we're in northern New South Wales on the border now. I know different states have different rules on contesting wills, and there's some that can be taken to court on a needs basis as well, and magistrates can overrule it.
It would have to go before a judge.
Judge, okay, yeah. The judge can overrule it. Is there any way a will can be worded prior to our deceased to say the reasons why we might have left more to one of the family than the other, or so it won't be contested? I don't want it to be a massive legal battle between family once we go.
Yep.
And also, to the other question is, and this happened to my ex-husband, where his father bypassed the two sons and left it to the children, the grandchildren, in trust. Is that still a viable thing that you can do?
Right. Well, let's answer the second question first.
Yes.
Your husband and his brother could have actually contested their father's will to provide on the basis that there was not adequate provision made for them out of the estate. So
that was years ago.
Yeah, no. So there's
Victoria,
absolutely no prospect of that being revived. But just to make the point that your husband and his brother would have come within the class of beneficiaries who could make a claim against their father's will. So that's a child, a spouse, or someone who's financially dependent on the deceased at the time of death. Now, that's the easy part out of the road. Now, with the first part of your question, and that is, having a situation where you're estranged from a child and there are problems in the relationship, I strongly recommend against putting anything in your will about that. So I would suggest, for example, if you want to make a will which says, and I imagine this would be your will, you still have a spouse?
Yes, I do.
Okay, so normally for a mum and dad, husband and wife, they'll have a will which says, I leave everything to my spouse and I appoint my spouse as executor of my will. But if they fail to survive, then I appoint Joe Bloggs or whoever as executor of my will. Yeah. And I leave the residue of my estate to my children in the following proportion. So you might leave 60, for example, if you've got two children, you might leave 70% to my daughter Julie and 30% to my son Bill. Now, that's all I would do in the will. But then beside that, I would prepare what we refer to as a statement of testamentary wishes, which is normally in the form of a statutory declaration, which goes into considerable detail as to why you have made a lesser provision for one child than the other. And it's important to go through all of the facts and circumstances that have led you to that decision. So, for example, if you're estranged from a child because that child has chosen to cut themselves off from you in the family, and despite attempts to contact them, they just will not have anything to do with you. You don't get Christmas cards, you don't get birthday cards, etc., etc. Well, that's a fairly strong reason why you could say it's reasonable that you're making greater provision for another child who's been a devoted child, maintained a normal child-parent relationship, etc., etc. And so you can reasonably say, well, this other child has effectively made a decision that they don't want to be part of our family, and they have completely cut themselves off. I have nothing to do with them, not through want of trying. I don't know anything about their children because they won't allow access to them. Whatever the story is, the story needs to be put down in detail, but it must be put down objectively. So there's, and it certainly must be truthful.
No emotion.
No emotion and no falsehood in the statements that are made. Now, what that statement, what that statement does then is that when you pass away, if there's nothing in your will, if the will simply says 70-30, the child who's getting 30% is entitled to get a copy of your will. So when they read the will and they just see 70-30, they may say, oh, look, probably in the circumstances that's reasonable because I realise I had absolutely nothing to do with mum. I decided I wasn't going to, I didn't want anything to do with her, et cetera, and they may accept it. But if you have in the will, I haven't left, I've only left this smaller share to Bill because, you know, he's been a rotten son and yada, 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 that just may crank him up to say, oh, well, all right, if that's the way you feel, I'm going to have a crack at this and contest the will. So the statement of wishes that you do only sees the light of day if there is a potential claim on the estate. So if someone makes a statement saying they intend to contest your will, the executor is the one who has sole control of that statement and can provide a copy of that statement at the appropriate time to the beneficiary who's intending to contest. Now, when the beneficiary reads that statement and sees the reasons, he will know and he'll be advised legally that that statement is going to be placed before the court in the event that he contests the will. So the judge is going to take into account what has been said in that statement, and unless the beneficiary can come up with cogent reasons why the statements made in that document are false or otherwise shouldn't be applied, then it is highly likely that the child will be unsuccessful in the claim. Now, the good news is that these days judges have become far more willing to order costs against unsuccessful applicants. So if Billy makes that claim and the judge says, look, this is an outrageous claim, it's quite clear you should never have brought it, I'm going to order you to pay the costs of this. You'll pay your own costs and you're also going to have to pay the estate's costs. Now, that can be a massive financial imposition, assuming that Billy's got any assets to back it up. So so that's you know, a fairly fulsome explanation. Now, I need to tell you that that statement of testamentary wishes is in the form of a statutory declaration, so it's been sworn under oath. So the court will take notice of it, but it will not be given the same weight as evidence that you would give to the court if you were alive. And obviously you can't give that evidence to the court because you're no longer here. So, and the reason for that is because the person who made the statement can't be cross-examined by the counsel for the person who's bringing the application. So therefore the court does diminish to some extent the weight given to that statement. But if the statement is factually correct and otherwise is impervious to attack by the other side, then the court will certainly take notice of it. And I've seen instances where that's been sufficient for an applicant to either decide not to proceed with their application or alternatively to lose the case for provision out of the estate.
Fantastic. Well, that gives me a very clear picture of it. That's great. Thank you very much for your help.
Okay then, Jane.
John,
all the very best.
Program.
Thank you for that. And the time on 4CAB, crikey, it's coming up to 29 minutes past nine. That's probably all the time we have today. Just one very quick thing before I go. I heard on the news this morning that the ACCC are launching an investigation into power generation and whether the power companies have been gouging in terms of these recent hikes in electricity, wholesale electricity costs. Allegedly, they've gone up 600% in 12 months. And I don't know much about the price of coal, but I certainly don't think the price of coal has gone up 600%. So if you've got a question or a query about your bill, you can always contact the Energy and Water Ombudsman in Queensland, and their number is 1-800-662-837. So that's 1-800-662-837, the Energy and Water Ombudsman here in Queensland. I'm John Fradgley from the Bell Legal Group. It's been great to be with you this morning. I'll look forward to being back with you, of course, next week. Talk about 30 June tax tips next week, just a few things to be aware of. But as always, until then, it's goodbye and God bless.
You've been listening to The Law and You, proudly brought to you by Bell Legal Group, the Gold Coast's longest established law firm, helping Gold Coasters since 1955. Call them today on 55 97 33 66.